the room. His attention had drawn in to lock on her, on them. He couldn't tell where her attention was, but she didn't seem aware of the others around them, any more than he was. Hmm. He mentally paused, then lowered his shields and opened his senses to all the impacts he'd been holding at bay, and the lure of her, the physical reality of the sensuous woman she had grown to be, flooded his mind. The whirlpool of temptation swirled to the circling of their feet, and nearly pulled him under. He slammed shut his mental doors at the very last moment, then slowly drew breath and steadied his giddy head. Good Lord! Their burgeoning attraction had grown even more powerful, infinitely more compelling than he'd realized. As the current measure drew to a whirling close, he accepted that talking to her directly about what lay between them had become imperative. He couldn't afford to delay and risk her seizing their reins. Given the reality of what he'd just glimpsed, if she tried to seize control, she might well succeed. And he had no idea what would happen then. He steered their circling feet toward the open doors. When the music ended, he halted and released her, but changed his grip on the hand he'd held and tipped his head toward the front hall. We need to talk. She opened her eyes wide, but then made the decision, a deliberate concession he was intended to see, and inclined her head.
Very well.
She wriggled her fingers, and when he released them, she wound her arm in his. He started for the doorway, and without a single glance behind, she walked with him out of the room. Just before they passed beyond the doorway, he looked back, but everyone else had turned toward the piano, where Worthington was being prevailed upon to play. No one had seen them leave.
Where to?
She slanted a glance at him.
I assume we need privacy.
He nodded and mentally scanned the house plan they'd worked from during the day.
The conservatory. Everyone else seems intent on waltzing or listening to the music. We should be safely private there.
But not too private. Unlike the morning room, someone else might walk into the conservatory at any time. He judged that was one risk she wouldn't as yet be likely to take. The conservatory lay at the end of the corridor that led right from the rear of the front hall. They passed the music room, and he opened the door with its glass panes, and Antonia preceded him into the humid warmth. Shutting the door, he surveyed the room. Greenery abounded on all sides, mostly ferns with the occasional palm lending height. The plants grew in pots of all shapes and sizes, placed on a floor of glazed tiles. The central section of the roof was composed of glass panes, and the end wall and half of the outer wall were completely glazed, no doubt affording vistas of the moonlit grounds, of the manicured lawns rolling away to the lake, with the dark shapes of the trees and the home wood looming to one side. The plants were densely packed and had been arranged to create a weaving path that led across and then down the length of the room. Sebastian hadn't been in the conservatory before, hadn't explored its amenities. Antonia walked to where the path turned. Glancing back at him, she waved down the room.
There's a clearing of sorts at the end.
Without waiting for any agreement, she started strolling. He followed. Halfway down the long room, the path straightened, and over Antonia's head, he saw a circular area ringed by low shrubs before the wall of windows at the end of the room. Two white-painted wrought iron chairs and a small matching table were set against the green backdrop. The spot seemed designed as a place to share secrets. Antonia led the way into the circle of ferns, some large-leaved, others with lacy fronds that bobbed in the faint currents created as she and Sebastian passed. Moonlight struck through the panes above, bathing the area in a silvery glow. To their left, a narrower path led through the ferns to a door, giving onto the rear terrace, presently deserted. There was no one else around. They were entirely alone. Expectation welled. Anticipation gripped her. Surely they weren't there to talk about the murderer. She halted and swung to face Sebastian. He'd been scanning their surroundings and hadn't been watching her. He abruptly pulled up with a scant few inches between them. She fixed her gaze on his eyes.
What?
The click of the door latch froze them both.
I've never known much about Ennis's Irish holdings.
Cecilia. She'd apparently halted just inside the door, out of sight of the area where Antonia and Sebastian stood. The glass surrounding them seemed to reflect Cecilia's words, rendering them with bell-like clarity.
We wondered if you'd heard of any changes to the management, the people running things there.
Filbury.
Sebastian frowned. They heard the click of the door as it shut.
There's still a bit of unrest over there, you see.
That was Wilson. Her eyes locked with Sebastian's. Antonia's mind raced. What did the men know? What did Cecilia know? What were the men trying to learn? And why?
As far as I know, there have been no changes, at least not to the senior staff, Cecilia said. But why not ask Connell?
He's rather overset by Ennis's death, don't you know? And we thought you might know, Filbury continued. We're just a touch concerned.
We're Connell's friends, Wilson put in, and we wouldn't want to see the estate get caught up in anything. Well, untoward.
Untoward?
Cecilia said. By their voices, the trio had been moving slowly away from the door. Any minute, they would reach the central path. There was nowhere Antonia and Sebastian could hide and continue to listen. If they moved onto the path to the terrace door, they would remain shielded for only a short time. And if they opened the door and tried to slip out, the cold air from outside would give them away. She evaluated their options at frantic speed, knowing Sebastian would be doing the same. They'd already heard too much. They needed some excuse, better, some screen that would suggest that they hadn't heard a word. They both knew their world. There was only one way. She hauled in a breath and stepped forward, boldly closing the distance between them. Reached up, framed the long planes of his face between her hands, stretched up on her toes, and pressed her lips to his. In the instant her lips met the cool firmness of his, she realized that, while this kiss was a subterfuge to excuse their presence and reassure Cecilia and the two men that it was unlikely they'd heard anything, she, the passionate woman inside her she so rarely let free, had been waiting for this moment for much of her life. It was that passionate woman who swept to the fore and took charge, who pressed her lips firmly to his, and with absolutely not a shred of reservation, boldly incited. Sebastian reacted instantly, instinctively. First, to the unvoiced understanding that they needed to excuse and diffuse their presence, to leave the others assured that they'd been far too distracted to have heard anything, much less taken anything in. But even as his arm swept around Antonia, and he drew her flush against him, and swung them so her back was to the path, and from beneath his lashes, he could observe the steadily approaching trio, even as he angled his head, covered her lips with his, and seized control of the kiss, he sensed another imperative, another demand, one he equally, instinctively moved to meet. She and the kiss dragged him under, into a whirling cauldron of hunger, of greedy, ravenous need, fueled by surging desire, hers as well as his. The exchange was supposed to be just a kiss, a pretense, a facade. It was anything but. Passion erupted. Too long denied, it geysered between them, drowning them in a raging tide of wanting. Hunger drove them. She parted her lips on a gasp, and he dove into the honeyed warmth of her mouth, plundering, claiming, needing to do so with an intensity that overwhelmed him, that seized him, shook him, and enslaved him. She pressed nearer. One hand slid from his cheek, and her fingers speared through his hair, then splayed and gripped. He tasted her joy, her effervescent delight, her enthusiasm and unbridled desire. She'd set herself free and ensnared him. She threw caution to the winds and effortlessly drew him with her. They strove to get closer, to taste more, to devour. Their mouths merged, lips melded, tongues tangling, stroking and inciting, and blatantly claiming. He and she lost all touch with the world. The entire company could have been standing, gawping, on the path, and he wouldn't have known and wouldn't have cared. In that instant, the only thing that mattered was her, the fiery, feisty woman she truly was, the woman he'd always instinctively known lived beneath her cool, composed exterior. The only imperative remaining in his mind was to appease her demands, to lure her and capture her, just as she had already captured him. It was tit for tat, a natural search for balance between them, and this time she was leading the dance, forging the way, and for once he didn't mind. Her lips were ambrosia, her mouth a dark paradise. The pressure of her body against his completed the lure, one that, for him, was utterly irresistible. Not that he had any wish to resist. Yet protectiveness remained, alert and watchful. Some distant part of his brain informed him that the trio had come farther along the path and seen them. But the intruders had halted, no doubt transfixed by the sight of him and the woman held tightly in his arms, standing in the clearing and bathed by moonlight. A soft male chuckle reached him. Half his luck. Then Cecilia murmured something, and the sound of footsteps creeping away faded. Good. The need for their charade had passed. They could end the kiss. But the man he was when she, the woman she truly was in his arms, had no intention of doing anything so senseless. This, her as she was, in his arms, with her lips under his, her hands in his hair, and her mouth and her pliant body surrendered, was exactly what his inner self craved. Now he had her where he needed her, he was in no hurry to let her go. No more than he did, she evinced any desire to break from the engagement. Instead, she pressed more firmly into his embrace. Antonia had given up all hope of rational thought, all notion of following any plan. Feelings, impulses, and compulsions battered at her and drove her. Recognizing and appeasing them made her wits spin. But of one thing she was ineradicably certain. She wanted more. More of everything. In that instant, she needed more of the sensation of Sebastian's muscled body riding against her heated curves, deliberately, blatantly provocatively,
She pressed her breasts to his chest and shifted, needing to ease the ache that had spread over her skin and sunk into her flesh, into her very bones. An urgent ache, one some primitive side of her recognized, an ache she yearned to ease. With her hands clutching his head, the soft feathery caress of his silky locks on the backs of her hands, another temptation, she held him to the kiss, held herself open to it, and gloried in the exchange, in the fiery flow of desire between them. Hot, stirring, and flagrantly needful, a steadily rising tide of wanting that was not just hers, but theirs. That compulsive passion swirled and welled and linked them. He responded to her tempting, her bold provocation, and closed one hard hand over her breast. Her heart leapt, then hammered, not in shock, but in giddy delight. He caressed, stroked, then palpated the suddenly swollen mound. Then his clever fingers found her nipple beneath the silk of her bodice and circled teasingly. Then he closed his fingers and gently squeezed. Her senses spiked, her nerves seized, and she lost what little breath she had. Eagerness swamped her. More. More.
Antonia!
They broke from the kiss. Eyes wide, for an instant, they stared at each other. Claire's call had acted like a pail of cold water dumped over them both. Abruptly, Sebastian's arms fell from her, and he looked up the path. Her heart tripping, she swung around to see, but her friend hadn't come far enough into the room, yet.
Antonia, are you there?
Melissa, this time. Struggling to catch her breath, Antonia glanced at Sebastian. Features setting, he stepped back. He straightened his coat, then raked a hand through the hair she realized she'd thoroughly mussed. She glanced down at her gown and hurriedly tugged the somewhat rumpled bodice into place, then looked up. Only a few seconds had elapsed. His expression close to its usual arrogantly impassive mask, he met her eyes and nodded. She hauled in a still far too tight breath.
Yes, we're here.
Even drawing on her years of social experience, she discovered it took every ounce of her will to keep her voice steady and her tone coolly composed, to plaster on an expression of serene assurance, and get herself moving in a reasonably smooth glide up the path. Sebastian followed close behind, strolling easily, as if they'd merely been admiring the views. Her pulse seemed to throb just beneath her skin. She felt flushed all over, and hoped it wouldn't show in the poor light. Melissa and Claire appeared on the path.
"There you are,"
Claire said.
"Cecilia said she thought you were in here."
Ignoring the large presence at her shoulder, Antonia airily waved down the path.
"The view is quite pretty in the moonlight."
Her friends were too well bred to stare suspiciously at Sebastian. Instead, they smiled, as if they believed her story. Melissa gestured toward the door.
"We're all going up."
In a group, the four of them made for the front hall, where they found the rest of the company gathering at the foot of the stairs. Over the heads, Sebastian glimpsed Worthington and Connell returning from the direction of the billiards room. A quick scan of the company showed everyone else was there. Cecilia made a gesture toward the stairs, and the ladies started up, the older ladies and Cecilia in the lead. Melinda Boyne and Amelie Billhurst followed, then Antonia and her friends. Sebastian started up beside Hadley, who was trailing his wife. Sebastian threw Hadley a questioning look. Hadley rolled his eyes. He lowered his voice and said,
"The older ladies
and Miss Boyne and Miss Billhurst have talked themselves into a tizzy over some itinerant having broken into the house and killed Ennis. Ergo, said itinerant might come back, God knows why, and we'll all be better off safely in our rooms upstairs. When Sebastian just looked at him, Hadley sighed. Yes, I know. It makes no sense, but the rest of us decided we could do with an early, or at least earlier, night. Sebastian glanced at the long case clock on the landing, just as it whirred and started to toll 10 o'clock. At the head of their small procession, Cecilia gained the top of the stairs and stepped into the gallery. She paused by the balustrade and glanced down at the rest of the company.
I'm hoping tomorrow will see us released. I'm sure we'll all feel relieved to be able to escape this place.
The comment, and her tone, struck Sebastian as odd. Still slowly climbing, he focused on her.
Will you be returning to London?
She shrugged and didn't meet his eyes.
It's the atmosphere here.
She gestured vaguely.
The sense of being under the same roof beneath which violent murder took place so recently, especially as the victim was my husband.
Indeed. Mrs. Parrish put a motherly arm around Cecilia.
Hardly surprising that you would want away from this place, my dear.
Even arranging poor Ennis's funeral,
Mrs. McGibbon stated,
can just as easily be done from elsewhere.
She patted Cecilia's shoulder in passing.
Just get a good night's sleep, dear. Everything will seem more settled in the morning.
Sebastian watched Cecilia as she allowed Mrs. Parrish to guide her into her room. There was a certain brittleness about Cecilia's demeanour that made him wonder. Directing his gaze at the floor, he blindly followed Antonia, Georgia, and Hadley to the east wing. He'd been Cecilia's lover once upon a time. He knew her well enough to be certain she was nervous or acting a part, or both. Experience, and what he'd overheard of that conversation in the conservatory, suggested it might well be both. He was fairly certain that neither Sir Humphrey nor the inspector would have pressed Cecilia, the grieving widow, and her grief was real enough, over whether she knew anything, or suspected anything, which was rather more likely. Both Sir Humphrey and the inspector would have assumed that Cecilia knew nothing about her husband's dealings. That was most likely true. But in this case, when those dealings involved plots and betrayal, they reached the corridor leading to their rooms. The others called good night, and he raised a hand in acknowledgement. He felt the very pointed look Antonia directed his way, but didn't meet it. With a distant nod in her direction, he went into his room and firmly shut the door. He wasn't ready to even think about what had erupted between them in the conservatory, what genie they'd released. He definitely wasn't ready to take their interaction any further that night. On that score, he needed to think long and hard about how best to proceed. As he shrugged out of his coat, his mind swung back to Cecilia. She wasn't stupid. Despite their various affairs, she and Ennis had still lived as a couple. He might have mentioned something over the breakfast cups that Cecilia remembered, and that Ennis's murder might have recast as having some deeper significance. Or she might have sensed something between Ennis and someone else, some man at the house party. He didn't bother to ring for Wilkins, but draped his coat over a chair. He stripped, tossed aside the silk pajama jacket, but donned the trousers, then slid between the sheets, turned down the lamp, slumped back, and stared at the ceiling. Courtesy of that incendiary kiss, he wasn't going to find sleep any time soon. He was still half aroused, and desire thrummed through his veins, tensing his muscles and leaving his skin taut. making a mental note to suggest to the inspector that questioning Cecilia more forcefully might bear fruit, he closed his eyes, willed his mind away from Antonia, from anything to do with her, and valiantly tried to think of something else. Chapter 10. An hour later, he was still wide awake. Lying on his back, his arms crossed behind his head, he stared moodily at the shadowed ceiling. Hunger still prowled beneath his skin, yet he was determined to ignore it, to deny it. Taking any further step with respect to Antonia no longer featured in his plans for this house party. Not even simply to discuss what he'd intended to discuss with her before they'd been sidetracked. Given what had occurred in the conservatory, he could imagine all too well how any such discussion, which would necessarily have to be conducted in private, would end. She'd wanted more. She'd had no intention of calling a halt, not until they'd been forced to. Recalling her responses, her blatant encouragements, he seriously doubted he could rely on her to toe any conventional line. And given how far their runaway passions had swept them, he couldn't be 100% certain he would be able to rein them, him and her in the grip of said passions, back. He could foresee the problem looming, one with which he'd never before had to contend. While he wasn't about to make the classic mistake of imagining he could predict what she was thinking, he didn't believe he was indulging in any overweeningly arrogant self-confidence. If he made it clear he wanted her, she would invite him to her bed, with alacrity. And then, heaven alone knew how matters would evolve. The threat of being unable to exert control, of not being in the driving seat, bothered him, troubled him, a lot. If he was brutally honest, it made him nervous. Control, as in being in control of himself and any situation in which he found himself, was something he strove always to maintain. He'd been trained to wield power more or less since birth, and in almost all situations, control was power. He shifted in the bed, still restless, still nowhere near relaxed enough to fall asleep. Outside his door, the house had quieted, settling, as large houses did, into brooding stillness. His eyes had grown accustomed to the dimness. The moon had shifted, and now shone sufficiently strongly through the uncurtained window to the side of the bed for him to see across the room quite clearly. The gentle creak of a floorboard outside his door drew his gaze to the panel. He blinked, focused, and confirmed that the door handle was slowly turning. He tensed to rise, then remained as he was. The shaft of moonlight fell across the bed. His face was in shadow. Anyone coming through the door wouldn't immediately see he was awake. The latch clicked back. The door was slowly, very slowly, pushed inward. Eyes glued to the spot, he waited, breath bated, to see who would appear. Cecilia? The murderer? Antonia drew in a tense, tight breath and slipped through the doorway into Sebastian's room. One swift, wide-eyed glance at the bed showed the molded line of his long legs, unmoving beneath the covers. The upper half of the bed lay in shadow, but surely by now he would be asleep. It had taken nearly an hour to conclude her internal debate. For her true self to win out, for her to accept that no matter the arguments against it, her best interests lay in pursuing their attraction to its logical conclusion there, at Pressingstoke Hall, where he and she stood on level ground. If she was ready and willing to forge ahead, so should he be. After that kiss, she had absolutely no doubt of what their future relationship would be. And if there was one fact that interlude in the conservatory had made abundantly clear, it was that he knew that too. Regardless, she could readily imagine he would seek to put things off until their return to London, and the ability to manage their interactions tipped his way. It would be unwise to allow that to happen, to allow them to return to their normal lives without establishing at least a basic framework for their future relationship. If she didn't make a push to get that much settled now, while they were there, she might well find herself married without having gained the assurances she needed to make marriage with a man, a nobleman, like him, work. And then getting that necessary framework in place would become a protracted battle. Such a scenario found no favour with her. If he had any sense, it wouldn't find favour with him either. But then, he was a man. A nobleman. One who thought he could manage damn near anyone. So it had to be there. And her moment was now. It was time for her to put her stamp on the relationship she was determined they would have. And regardless of whatever plans he might have made to the contrary, as witnessed by the fact he hadn't come to her room, she knew perfectly well that if she issued a challenge, he wouldn't, simply didn't have it in him to refuse to engage. Turning back to the door, she carefully eased it shut. No sense waking the tiger too early. She stood staring at the panel. This was her moment of no return. She drew in a breath, swung around, and determinedly walked to the bed. She halted beside it, blinking as she saw he was definitely not asleep. Blinking as her eyes drank in the sight of his bare chest, displayed in its muscled glory, given he was lying with his hands behind his head, and the sheet lay across his waist. It had been a decade and more since she'd last seen his chest bare, and the image she retained from then was very, very different to what lay before her now. What lay before her now made her senses sing, made her mouth water. Several more seconds elapsed before she finally dragged her gaze up to his face. And despite the dim light, met a look that was one step away from a glare. "What the devil are you doing here?" His voice was low, his tone aggressive, his diction clipped and forceful. Had she harbored any doubt that he held a definite view as to how their relationship should evolve, specifically under his direction, those words would have eradicated it. She took her time studying him, then opened her eyes wide. "With all your years of experience, after that kiss in the conservatory, I would have thought you would know." Her inner wildness had well and truly taken over. Even to her ears, her voice sounded sultry, converting the simple words into a blatant provocation. She saw tendons in his arms shift as his hands fisted in response, but his lips had set in a hard line, and stubborn to the last, he didn't move.
"I decided,"
she continued, her tone a conversational purr,
"that it was time we dealt with this. With what's grown between you and me."
"Undoubtedly."
Sebastian seized on her words like a drowning man.
"But is this the best venue for a rational discussion?"
With her standing by his bed, gilded by moonlight, her hair cascading over her shoulders, her curves wrapped in a pearl-pink silk robe, with, he fervently prayed, a nightgown beneath, she was a sight designed expressly to addle his wits. Rational discussion was already far beyond him. It was all he could do to keep himself locked in position in the bed. His inner self was scrabbling to break free of his reins and seize her. And, thrusting such thoroughly unhelpful thoughts aside, he fought to keep his eyes glued to her face and ignore the impulses pummeling him. Her fine brows arched, although her expression conveyed taunting amusement of a distinctly feminine flavour. He sensed something else in her shadowed eyes, in the steadiness of her gaze, a quality of steely determination, again with a definitely feminine feel that, he realized, he associated with her. Like a hallmark. A hallmark that declared her backbone was of the same tempered steel as her mother's, as his mother's, his sister's, and all their ilk. He was a nobleman, but she was his equal. That last scale fell from his eyes as she quietly replied,
"Who said anything about discussion, rational or otherwise?"
And he knew from her tone this was one battle he wasn't going to win. He made one last desperate bid for the reins. "Antonia." Smoothly, with a determination that was all the more impactful because of her gracefulness, she drew the sash at her waist undone, and the sides of her silken robe gaped. He broke off with a damn near audible gasp as he saw his prayer for a nightgown had been rejected. Beneath the robe lay long, delicately curved limbs, perfectly rounded shoulders, breasts that promised to fill his hands, and hips that formed a perfect cradle that was, at least as his primitive mind saw it, shaped specifically for him, all sheathed in skin, one shade away from alabaster white. The moonlight struck, caressed, and turned that skin exquisitely pearlescent. He felt as if he'd swallowed his tongue. He certainly couldn't find it. His mouth had dried. He couldn't remember the last time he'd been struck speechless at the sight of a woman's body. He had a sneaking suspicion he never had been. Not until now. She took his silence as acquiescence, as surrender, which it was. She shrugged off the robe, letting it slide with a sibilant susurration down her delectably long limbs to pool about her slender feet. Completing his capture. Starting the torture. He had, he realized, no defense against her. None whatsoever. Had he ever had? He'd always thought, being dark-haired himself, that blondes were the right foil for him. Virtually all his lovers had been blondes. The few who hadn't had been redheads. He'd never taken a brunette as a lover. But as he, his senses, drank her in, he had to wonder if some part of him had always known, always recognized that she, black-haired, was his one true lover, his perfect mate. And consequently he'd shied from taking any like her, any his senses might see as a substitute for her, to his bed. He was already so ferociously aroused, if he thought about it, he would be in pain. Unable to summon either strength or will to stop her, he watched as she knelt on the bed and, with that grace that was so much a part of her, in a crawling prowl, came up the bed toward him. He assumed her aim would be to lie by his side. But then she shifted, slid a leg over his hips, and sat on the sheet across his waist. He closed his eyes, and only just bit back a groan. Behind his head, he held his wrists in a death grip to stop himself from reaching for her. the warm, alluring pressure of her weight over his waist and upper belly, the firm press of her inner thighs against his sides, was temptation incarnate. She had him trapped, physically trapped. He couldn't move, and there was nothing he could do. She purred, and it was definitely the purr of a cat surveying her own bowl of cream.
Where to begin?
The question sounded distinctly rhetorical, which calmed him not at all. Her hands hadn't yet touched him. He cracked open his lids. His gaze fell on her breasts. The luscious mounds, pearlescent in the silvery radiance of the moon, their peaks tipped with rosy pink aureolas and nipples, made his mouth water. She'd straightened, and her hands rested on the sleek muscles of her widespread thighs. He hauled in a tight breath and forced his gaze up to her face, to her perfectly sculpted chin, to the fullness of her lips, eventually to her eyes. He trapped her gaze as she raised her eyes to meet his.
You're a virgin.
He couldn't remember the last time he'd had a virgin beneath him. Sometime in his school days. She blinked her eyes wide.
I know.
Her lips slowly curved in another of those amused female smiles, the sort women used when they knew they had the man in question exactly where they wanted him. Helpless.
I'm fairly certain you're up to dealing with that little matter for me.
Then the damned woman swayed, sensuously shifting the globes of her derriere so they brushed the head of his straining erection. He couldn't stifle his groan. Again, he closed his eyes, clutched his wrists. His jaw felt as if it would crack.
Why am I resisting?
He'd known the reasons before she'd walked into the room, but they escaped him now. Was there any sense in prolonging his resistance to something that was clearly, whether there or in London, going to be?
Antonia.
His voice was almost gone. So deep, so rough, it was more growl than diction. He dragged in another breath and realized he didn't have any idea what he wanted to say. Then he felt her weight shift. Is she pulling back? A wholly contradictory panic assailed him. He opened his eyes. As she put her hands on the bed, on either side of his shoulders, and leaned close, much closer. From a distance of mere inches, her grey eyes met his. Fearlessly, she held his gaze, and cat-like, dipped, so her breasts, delectably warm, deliciously weighted silken mounds, caressed his chest as she closed the last inch and breathed over his lips.
Sebastian.
Then she covered his lips with hers, and he was lost, utterly and completely vanquished, not by her, but by the primitive force she unleashed in him. That she was there, patently recognizing that she was his, by her own wordless declaration accepting that truth, and offering herself so blatantly to him, there was no way he couldn't seize. His hands whipped from behind his head, clamped about her hips, and he rolled, bringing her down to the bed beside him. Then he rolled further, and she was beneath him. The movement had trapped the sheet between them. He considered that a bonus, given she was, as he'd reminded her, a virgin. This engagement would have to be slow, even though every impulse he possessed hungered, wanted, now, this second. Ruthlessly, he seized control of the kiss, and kissed her ravenously, rapaciously, with a plundering voraciousness he couldn't tame. Didn't want to. saw no need to. This, him and her like this, rolling naked in a bed, had been written in their stars. As if confirming that, she matched him to a large degree. Only his years of experience distinguished their efforts, in their intent, in the strength and sheer power of their desire. They were otherwise well matched. And there was, he discovered, as her hands found his chest and stroked, caressed, and then blatantly possessed, nothing wrong with her imagination or her inventiveness. She caught his lower lip between her teeth and tugged, then nipped, sending a surge of sheer lust to his groin. Not that that part of his anatomy needed further urging. He ached to join with her. But first things first. Antonia had always wondered how she would feel in this position, naked with a man's weight pinning her to a bed. As it was, she couldn't stop smiling. Even as she answered his searing kisses with fiery kisses of her own, even as her fingertips sank into the broad sweep of muscles banding his chest, and she battled to hold on to her whirling wits, her lips were curved, and inside she was grinning. With effervescent joy, and not a little satisfaction. She'd wanted this. She'd played her hand and risked an embarrassing scene. Had gambled on his desire for her being strong enough to break free of his restraint and answer her call. And he'd proved her right, and she'd won. But oh my lord, this was better than she'd expected. Even better than her wildest fantasies. The scalding heat, the earthy promise, the spiking sensations were all heralds of a deepening intimacy. Above all else, the elemental power, the raw possessiveness that flexed beneath his skin, that invested his every muscle, that although still under his command, strained to snap its leash, called to her inner wildness as nothing else ever had. Well matched? No. They were more. Perfect compliments. Even as the concept flashed through her mind, distracted to the limit by so many novel sensations, the erratic abrasive brush of the wiry dark hair adorning his chest over the fine skin of her already sensitive breasts, the ruthlessly commanding pressure of his lips, the all-too-evocative probing of his tongue, the flexing of his fingers as they gripped her hips and held her down, she suddenly understood her own instincts, understood why she'd been so set on pressing on with this engagement here and now. Because the marriage she wanted with him was one of perfect complements, not precisely equals, but balancing halves. They were different, had different strengths, and although their weaknesses were few, they differed in those too. With his hands drifting upward from her hips, cruising over her sides, she couldn't corral her wits sufficiently to ponder her new insight. Yet at those distracting hands closed possessively over her breasts, one goal shone, compulsively demanding, in her mind. She needed to establish the necessary framework in which that perfect complementarity could flourish, here, now, in this bed, in this arena, one in which he was regarded as an expert, and she had no training, no experience. But if she didn't succeed here, didn't set their course correctly tonight, even as his fingers played, and she felt her spine bow, tensing in response to the most exquisite pleasure,
Even as her wits deserted her, she committed herself to her goal. But wresting control from him in this sphere was easier thought than done. Every time she tried to focus on him, he distracted her with a touch, a caress, each laden with such blatant demand, such domineering possessiveness, that her mind seized, caught on the cusp of wanting to protest and wanting to savor. Time and again, savoring one, he steadily swept her into deeper, sensual seas, and rather than cavil, she urged him on. Sebastian hadn't expected anything else. She had instigated this, had climbed naked into his bed, and insisted they take this road, here, now. And his inner self had never been of a mind to argue. But even as he indulged his fascination with her breasts, with the superfine skin, with a texture that was a cross between peach silk and satin, even as he finally bowed to his inner demons ranting, wrenched his lips from hers, bent his head, and tasted one delectable curve, he was conscious of an elusive novelty, of something being different. He'd been along this road so many times, it was impossible not to notice the deeper thud in his veins, the evidence of something beyond mere desire. With any other woman, such an encounter would have been about nothing beyond pleasure, an appeasement of a mutual desire that, although it might flare hotly, was destined to burn for only a short time. With Antonia, that quest for pleasure, hers even more than his, remained, but beneath that pulsed another drive, one he recognized as having elements of possessiveness, of a need to claim, to brand her as his and no other's. With a woman, a lady, a noble woman like her, thinking in terms of ownership was as futile as it was archaic. That said, as he bent his head and took one rosy, tightly puckered nipple into his mouth, licked, laved, then suckled, and she clutched his head and moaned, he was acutely aware of an impulse to mark her, but reined himself back. He reminded himself she was new to this, and this time, her pleasure would be his first reward. He set out to claim it, to distract himself from that surging, underlying emotion by reducing her to gasping surrender. Beneath his expert ministrations, she writhed and clutched. He achieved the gasps. But instead of surrender, those gasps came with increasingly insistent, increasingly explicit demands. She seemed intent on pushing him, on testing his control. With her hands, with her lips and tongue, with the untutored undulations of her body beneath his, she persisted in driving him on, driving him just a little insane. He didn't realize just how truly enthralling the web of desire she'd cast over him was. Not until her greedy, grasping hands slid evocatively down his back, long fingers reaching for the waistband of his silk trousers, but lying as they were, she couldn't quite reach, something he'd made sure of. Yet in instinctive response to that unvoiced demand, he rolled to his side and whipped off the offending garment, even as she eagerly thrust aside the sheet, the last barrier screening their hips and legs. Only then did he remember that they were supposed to be going slowly. Too late. Even as the thought bloomed in his brain, she hooked a hand around his nape and hauled him into a searing kiss, as she twisted
and brought her body and long legs flush against his. The sudden contact, burning skin to burning skin, sent fire leaping down every vein. Then their legs were tangling along with their twining tongues, and with blatant provocation and flagrant invitation, she arched against him. Something in him broke, shattered. Then her other hand slid between their hips, and she cradled his erection in her hot palm, then closed her fingers in incendiary possessiveness and unadulterated demand about him. And her conquest was complete. Not a single thought, not a single glimmer of self-protectiveness, of any need for caution or restraint, remained to deflect the driving need to be inside her, to join with her and ride with her into ecstasy. He couldn't breathe other than in shallow draughts, and he didn't think she was any better. Need consumed them, hot and demanding, and they fumbled and shifted and rolled and writhed. Fire burned wherever they touched, their bodies flamed with near incandescent passion. With their lips locked, he raced his hands over her one last time. Then he gripped her upper arms, rolled her onto her back, and came up on his elbows over her. His hips pressed hers to the bed. He had to use his weight to corral her. But her hand hadn't released his erection, and with every caress, she stole his breath, his wits, his very will. Roughly, he caught first one hand, then the other, then drew back from the kiss long enough to haul her hands over her head and with one hand anchor them in the pillows, her black hair a silken mass cast over the white pillows she lifted beneath him, twisting to see. With his free hand, he caught her chin, drew it down, bent his head, and took her mouth, this time without the slightest finesse. Not that she seemed to care. Every ounce of demand, of command, and scorching hunger he poured into the kiss, into her, she returned in full measure, further heating them both. He'd never in his life felt so consumed, so driven. But they both needed this, it seemed. Plundering her mouth, holding her to the kiss, he released her chin and skated his hand over her breast, paused to knead and claim again, first one mound, then the other. Then he sent his palm gliding over her desired dewed skin, tracing a path downward to where a patch of black curls hid the delicate folds of her sex. He wasn't surprised when she gasped at his first touch, or that she shifted and squirmed as he wedged her thighs open, parted her folds, and learned her secrets. Antonia's mind felt overwhelmed. So many sensations, so many startlingly new, so much to absorb. But this intimate exploration, was something she'd heard of, but had never fully comprehended. She'd never grasped how intensely pleasurable it would be. His lips remained on hers, languidly supping, and while all but instinctively she returned the slow caresses, her focus had shifted, registering and recording each glide of his fingers, each stroke, each intimate probing. Then he circled the nub of flesh at the apex of her thighs, and her nerves sparked, and heightened tension shivered through her. That tension sank deep, seeming to pool in molten waves in a cavern low in her body. She'd barely adjusted to the latest sensations, to the sparking pleasure as he touched her just there, when he kissed her more deeply, temporarily deflecting her attention, and with his thumb, riding against that nub of sensitive flesh, he slid one long, heavy finger deep into her sheath. Her nerves leapt. Her senses constricted, locking on the intrusion. She lost all awareness of the world beyond the bed, beyond them, him and her, in the heated darkness. That he knew what he was doing, she had not a single doubt. In climbing into his bed, she'd already made the decision that she would trust him with her body. She'd already trusted him with nearly everything else. So she drew breath through the kiss and let him show her. Let him open her eyes to the extraordinary pleasures of lovemaking, of such intimate sharing. And that heated tension, born of need, of hunger and yearning, changed, coalescing into a spiral that constantly shrank, cinching tighter into an ever hotter knot of need that the rhythmic glide of his finger in her sheath only heightened. Tightened. Then he shifted the hand between her thighs, pressed more firmly with his thumb as he reached deep into her body, and the spiral imploded. Fractured and shattered. Her spine bowed, and she cried out, the sound muffled between their lips. Pleasure, sharp, exquisite, excruciatingly intense, flashed down every nerve, followed almost instantly by a sensation of suffusing heat and a feeling of blessed ease, of release. She sighed into his mouth, and her spine eased back to the bed. Pleasure and that sudden loss of tension seemed to reach to her toes. Yet inside, in that heated cavern, she still felt strangely empty. He drew back from the kiss. She sensed him studying her face. Her lids were too heavy to lift, but she let her lips curve.
"Very nice," she murmured. "For the first course."
He huffed out a laugh that sounded ridiculously breathless.
"So, what's next?"
He dropped his forehead to hers.
"You're going to be the death of me."
"La petite mort? I certainly hope so."
He groaned. She realized he was quivering, his muscles quaking, as if they were under enormous strain.
"We don't have to. Not yet. We could wait until later."
"No, now, Sebastian."
Of that, she was quite sure. She opened her eyes as he shifted, easing to her side. His grip on her wrists loosened, and she slid her hands free and lowered her arms. He looked into her eyes. She wondered if he knew his were molten. The usually cool green was anything but. His irises glowed, as if banked fires burned inside him. Despite that, he met her gaze levelly and said,
"You're slender, and I'm not. The first time is going to hurt, no matter what. Are you truly sure?"
She didn't bother answering, not with words. She reached for his erection, and found it as hard as